It's a privilege to be with you here and to share around the Word. The first song we sang talked about the need for some deep revealing. And any of you that have been parents, a dad or a mom, and even reaches into grandparenting as well, that feeling of needing deep revealing for that task at hand should be real to each one of us. We need what God has to guide children in their growing up years. And so I feel that very much. In fact, as I was thinking about this tonight, sharing this subject, there probably was a time in my younger years that I felt more confident about guiding children than I do at this age. That doesn't mean I'm intimidated by rearing children, but as life unfolds in front of us and you face situations, you realize other home situations, it just comes home, the reality comes home that by ourselves and in and of ourselves, we don't have the answers. But that doesn't mean tonight that if you're a young parent, a young father, young mother, that there is not answers. There is answers. God has placed parents in the home for the specific reason for guiding children. And when he places people in specific positions of responsibility, he will give you what it takes. He will enable you to be able to carry through with those responsibilities. And that's just a promise I want to leave with each one of us, because it is true. Guiding our children in their growing up years. As I thought about the title and as I thought about the impact, the long-range impact, and what the weight of what is before us, I thought of it this way. Every newborn child in every generation is a brand new God-given opportunity for parents to help reset society toward truth. The answer does not all lie within one child, but it is a help. The weight, I believe, is to that measure. A newborn child, we just had a new grandchild, 2 days ago. And you think about that child, so innocent, the ability so limited, and yet God has placed it into the hands of parents to guide it toward a destination. It is not just another child to help on the farm. It's not just another child to help in the sawmill. It's not just another child to help cook and wash dishes and clean the house. Yes, those things, that will be a part of the life that they live, of course. But there is a much greater calling. So rearing children is a mission in itself, a part of the kingdom that God has entrusted to parents to help in this one life. In this one life to help reset society toward truth. And you say, well, one in comparison with all of society. I know, it's just one. But it is still that serious tonight, I believe. In regards to the title, we have a subject, and that is young human beings, children, guiding our children. There is a subject at hand. There is it's these children. The subject or the title also tells us that we have an activity, a work. That work is guiding. We could have went to Ephesians. I'm going to spend most of my time in Proverbs. In fact, you can turn to Proverbs 3, and we'll get there in a bit. But in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, it says, bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And just prior to that, it says, and ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. And so there is a demeanor by which we should parent. The title also tells us that we have a limited window of time. They're growing up years. Our youngest child is, I believe, 12. And all of us talk about this thing of time fleeting by. I don't know how. I can't tell you how that this month I'm going to be 52 years old, and that the bulk of our parenting of small children, that window of time has already passed us by. I can't tell you how I got there that fast. But it just is a reminder to me, should be a reminder to those of you that are in the heat of the battle with little children, that the window of time, the growing up years. And as I think about growing up years, I think from newborn to somehow the age 18 comes to my mind. And somewhere in that vicinity of 18 to 20, they are grown up. They're not growing up anymore. They're grown up as far as physical maturity and so on. But there is a sense in which, when it comes to emotional and spiritual maturing, they're still growing up. But I take the title tonight to be in those impressionable, especially in the impressionable years, where the child is drinking up the instruction and the parents bringing them to a point where they're pretty much on their own and making life choices and so on. That window of time, the growing up years, is a limited window of time. And the inference of the title is that guiding children is a necessary activity. It's a necessary activity. Proverbs tells us that a child left to himself would bring his mother to shame. Not only his mother, that's what the scripture says, and that is true, but it'll bring his father, a child left to himself, bring the church to shame. It'll bring many, many people to shame. And so it is inferring that guiding children is a necessary activity. It also infers that there is a particular path, a particular goal or destination that children need guidance towards. And that is true. There is a particular path. The inference also is that there is someone who has an assigned responsibility to guide the child. We have an assigned, as parents, we have an assigned responsibility. We mentioned that. God-given responsibility. There is someone that God has placed into the child's life. If you're at Proverbs chapter 3, we'd like to just read verses 1 and 2. We'll look at some of the rest of the chapter a little later on. Proverbs chapter 3, verses 1 and 2. My son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. For length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. The first part of the message is parental claims. The first one is my son. The first parental claim is my son. And that is a claim of relationship. It is a claim that I am related to you. Not necessarily by blood, it could be by adoption, but I am related to you. I am your father. I am your mother. You are my son. You are my daughter. It says, my son. It's a claim of relationship. And that, and for us as parents to always hold that dear in our heart, that this is my child. It is very important to understand and for it to go deeply into the recesses of our mind and our hearts that this is my son. It is a claim. My daughter. When we claim relationship, it is also a claim of responsibility. That's why it needs held dearly in our hearts. There is many in society, and we'll not talk about that much, but many in society that have rejected the thought that you are my son or you are my daughter. And because of not accepting that claim, then neither do they accept the responsibility of guiding that child toward the goal and guiding the child in their growing up years. And so it is very important that we understand. And when we speak and communicate with our children, that we say, my son. And maybe not in those words, but we understand in our heart and believe expressly that we have that relationship and we claim that responsibility. My son, my daughter. It is also a statement of love from parent to child. My son, my daughter. He says, secondly, second parental claim is, forget not my law. I should say it this way, forget not my law. My law. And he says further, my commandments. I find this striking. And it is another parental claim that is so, so important. Because this claim is a claim of parental personal value. My son, keep my commandments. My son, my daughter, keep, forget not my law. My law. And so it is something in the parents, in the parents' hearts, in the father's heart, in the mother's heart. We are claiming that the values that I hold will guide my child correctly. The values that I hold, they're not my values. It is the values that I hold, and we'll get to that later. It is the values of truth, the values of God, the values of the Bible, the principles of the Word. And so when we say to our child, forget not my law, forget not my commandments, I am communicating to the child that I hold something in my heart that will better your life. It is the truth of the Word. And so it comes to us, it should come to us as parents to ponder this deeply. What are my values? What are yours? So you are in the position of responsibility of guiding your children in their growing up years. You're a young parent. You're a middle-aged parent. You're an older parent. And part of this claim that they are your children. You claim that responsibility. You speak to your children. And the claim is that you hold values that will guide them correctly. Is that true of your life? Is that true of your life? And so is it time to do a little inventory as parents? Do I hold the values of the Word? Do I hold the values of truth that I am able to communicate them to my child, and upon the promise that what I offer to you, because of what God has given to me, what I offer to you will better your life. And it will point you and lead you to God, to the goal. It is a claim that the values I hold and teach have the potential to guide the child correctly. The third thing I see here on the first part of parental claims is a reward for the correct choices, and that's in verse 2. It says, for length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. He's saying, if you follow my commandments, if you follow the values that I hold, and I will endeavor to communicate them to you because you are my son, if you do these things, there is a reward. It will better your life. It will lead you to a better place. It will lead you to a better life. It will be a blessing to you. It is a claim that if you follow my instruction, you will reach the desired goal. Doesn't it carry a lot of weight? To be a parent and have these children under your responsibility, under your care, and in a way we're stewards, just stewards of them. We don't claim ownership in a way. And I know some of these words, you know, we can slice it kind of thin, or we can use a word that's maybe more broad, and we mean it to be sliced thin. But the weight of being able to have that claim, to make that claim, that you will reach the desired goal if you follow my instruction. Second area of the message is parental values. Just stepping back a little bit to one of the points that we, and just spending a little more time on what we already looked at or brought out in a look at it in a more comprehensive way. So what do children need guided toward? So we talked about these values that we should have as parents. What is that? What do they need guided toward, or who? What information do children need guided with? What is that? What is that information? Excuse me. What possession of values must parents hold? Proverbs 23:23 says, "Buy the truth and sell it not." And so the answer, we know the answer, but we need reminded of these things. That all of this, the three questions comes down to this. The answer is biblical truth. The answer is God. The answer is God's values. We go through, if you read through Proverbs, and there's a lot in there about wisdom versus wickedness. Wisdom versus perversion. There's wise versus foolish. And there's instruction coming out of Proverbs that continually tells us to choose God, to choose godly values, to choose biblical truth. And that is the answer to all of these. We could go through Proverbs and it would take many more segments of this topic, but you go to chapter 1. And one of the main themes is there, he's teaching and warning against the danger of wicked associates. This is biblical truth. He's saying if you're going to associate with wicked people, it's going to be a snare to you. Could be a snare to you. My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. This is the biblical truth. And so this is where the answer comes in. You go to chapter 2. And he's teaching. He's instructing. And again, it comes down to the thought of, my son, forget not my law and my commandments, which go back to God. The commandments that I am telling you are founded in God, are founded in biblical principles. The instruction that I'm giving to you is founded in biblical truth, in God's values. In chapter 2, he's teaching against sexual sins. He tells us about the danger of those and to how to stay away from those things. In chapter 3, verse 3, he says, "Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them about thy neck. Write them upon the table of thine heart." He said these are two things that you must have in life. What is truth? Going back to biblical truth, God's values, God's truth. In verse 5, he's teaching how to trust in the Lord. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not to thine own understanding. These are the values that he's saying that parents must have. And it is his claim that this is the values he has. And he's teaching them to his child. He says in verse 9, "Honor the Lord with thy substance." He's teaching against materialism. In verse 11, he's telling us how to face the difficulties of life and God's correction in our life. "My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, neither be weary of his correction." In verse 13, he simply makes a statement, "Happy is the man that findeth wisdom." He's saying, get that, my son, my daughter. In 19, he tells us where wisdom comes from. I believe that's the point he's making in 19 and 20. It says, "The Lord by wisdom hath founded the earth. By understanding hath he established the heavens. By his knowledge the depths are broken up and the clouds drop down the dew." So as he's going through chapters 1, 2, and 3 talking about wisdom, he gets down to verse 19 and it seems like he's thinking, well, how do I reinforce in my teaching here that this wisdom is the greatest wisdom that there is? And so he reflects on God the Lord and all that is created and the existence of the earth and how that it is God sustains the entire universe. And he said, that's where this wisdom comes from. The same wisdom that the Lord has in creating and keeping the earth in existence, that's where it comes from. That's how important it is. That's how great it is. These are the values that we must hold as parents. We have to have this Lord's wisdom. And we could go on, but all of Proverbs is full of this kind of practical teaching, covering one subject after another, one subject after another, and it all points back to God, the values that God has. And he wants us to hold as parents, because this is what our children need guided with. This is the possession of values that parents must hold. This God is what our children need guided toward, guiding our children in their growing up years. Third area of the message, parental guidance. How? How shall we guide? Again, just simple points. But number one is communication. Communication. Silence. Of course, silence communicates something. We cannot say that silence communicates nothing. But if we're going to guide our children in the ways of God, toward God, in godly principles, biblical principles, we need to communicate. And there's so many words that are within communication. We can talk about command. We can talk about discuss. We can talk about answering questions. We can use the word requests. We can use the word appeal. There's so many words, and as I think about guiding children in the growing up years, we have that infant that is unable to communicate at any level. And then you go the whole way up, let's just say at 18 years old, you have basically an adult that can they have thoughts of their own, they have opinions of their own, they're forming, their mental acuity is forming, and there's conviction that is forming. And so how we communicate from that infant the whole way to the 18-year-old, I'll use the word evolves. It's different. You communicate differently to a 2-year-old than you do to an 18-year-old. For a 10-year-old, a 14-year-old, you communicate differently. And we'll not get into all of that in its details, but there's age variances. You know, my wife and I were just talking about it. I think it was probably in relation to this subject, how that we have 8 children. And when all of those were around us, just say from 12 years and down, or 14 years and down, I would say that in those years we were materially and physically taxed. You know, that's where the energies surrounded those two things. And as they move into the teenage years and upper teenage years, we have some that are not married at home. I think our oldest at home is 25. And in relating to that, there's more the I guess I'll use the word emotional. Taxation, and you're taxed more in that way. I don't know that one is greater or lesser than the other. It's just different. And this is the communicating. You need to communicate in ways that are profitable. That in ways that you as parents can see that the child got it, that they understood it. Communicate. That's how parents guide. They communicate. Number two, we communicate by example. Actions. Attitudes. You know, if I as a parent, if I as a father, if my feet are pointed this direction and my words are pointed another direction, I think most times the feet will be where the children take their cues. My feet will communicate an awful lot. And so our feet and our communication, our feet and our mouth must be pointed the same direction, and that is toward God. Toward God. So important that the way we live, the way our actions and our attitudes align with our commitment to Christ, align with our with what we say we are as a Christian. Our example. Number three, parental guidance. What does it include? It includes discipline. We stand against wrongdoing in the child's life. We stand against it. Don't weary of it. Don't weary of it. I understand. Some days it's like, when will it let up? But we stand against wrong in the child's life. We stand there like a stone. We stand against wrongdoing. We stand against it. We stand against it all day. We get up the next morning, we stand against it again. We stand against wrongdoing in the child's life. The child needs that. Guiding children in their growing up years, not only do we communicate, not only do we give them a good example to follow, but we bring in discipline, and that is we stand against the wrong that they so much are tempted to do. We make wrongdoing difficult in the child's life. We make wrongdoing difficult. They do something wrong. There needs to be some type of punishment. Of course, godly. Godly discipline. I'm not talking about things, I'm not talking about any kind of abuse. Not verbal abuse, not physical abuse, none of those. But we make wrongdoing difficult. That's part of standing up against wrong. We say, well, this the choice you made, this is the consequence. It just must be the way, it must be that way. You know, there's people that are waffling some in this day and age, and probably always has been, about this thing of discipline. You have the thing of gentle parenting out there that's knocking at the doors and hearts of some of our young families. But I just give a simple example of consequence that teaches a child. And I remember in our own children's life, we had a little kerosene heater in the first home we lived in, actually two of the homes we lived in. We had a trailer houses we lived in, and it was cheaper to burn kerosene back when kerosene was 99 cents a gallon. We used a kerosene heater, and it was much cheaper than electric, but it was hot, and it could burn children, right? It had this little shroud, little screen shroud around it. It was not dangerous, but you still had to stay away from it, right? And I remember our first, and my heart went out to him. But he got his little finger in there against something and put a little blister on him, and he cried. But guess what? I don't ever remember him touching that again. It's simply bringing out the point that if you make wrongdoing difficult in a child's life, it teaches them to not do wrong. And then I think we must make doing right rewarding. I'm not sure how far to take this one, because there is a part that we expect our children to do right. So I don't think in every little instance that, you know, we somehow pay out for every good thing. But there needs to be encouragement. There needs to be make doing right rewarding, where we say, that was good. That was a good choice. Thank you for making that choice. Thank you. That was the right thing to do. And children understand, because really, that's the way God operates, right? He makes doing right rewarding. We have the promise of heaven. We have the blessings of good relationship if we follow those rules and so on. So I think it's a right thing to make right doing rewarding, because I believe God shows us that. The fourth and last area of the message, palatable parenting. Point number one, make time. Guidance takes time. It takes time. And maybe I'm just getting older, but it just seems to me that in today's world, more than ever before, we need to prioritize parenting. There just seems to be more knocking at our doors. We're so connected to so many things in today's world. In my mind, it's a different world. It doesn't mean it's not doable. It is doable. God gives us what we need. But it's just more than ever before. I'm just going to say it this way. More than ever before, we need to prioritize and make time to guide our children. We can be home and not be at home as dads. We can be connected to something else. Mom's same way during the day. You can be there but not there. I think it's just in more ways than it used to be. We can get so caught up in paying the bills which need paid. And I remember those days. I'm a little older now and things have eased up a little bit. To those days of, you know what, if I miss a day's work, I'm not sure what's going to happen. And so you have that pull and that responsibility to physically provide for the children and the wife and the home, that it can pull us off to the side. And yes, we're taking care of a sliver of the parenting that we need to do as a dad or as a mom. But am I guiding these children, or am I just paying their bills? So we have to make time to communicate. Make time to hear. Take time to hear the children. They ask questions. They want to tell their little stories. They have all of these things that's so important. Why do they want to tell you, Dad? Why do they want to tell you, Mom? Because you're the most important person in their life. And so they're reaching out to you. They're thinking in their little minds, maybe not putting these thoughts to it, but what's happening intuitively is they want to tell Dad. They want to tell Mom. Let's hear them. And I don't give you all this list of things because I feel like I have been the best in them. I'm saying to remind us. I'm sure I have failed in many of these, not taking the opportunity that I had. Make time to ask questions. Be involved in your children's life. Ask them questions. As they get older, they might not like the questions as well. What time did you get home last night? Where were you last night? What all did you do? So they were away for a day or whatever. They were doing some things. You know, they were with their friends. Where all were you? Was your activities all above board? So those questions, but don't be intimidated, dads. Don't be intimidated, mothers. Those questions need asked. I know of a young man, he's not young anymore, he's a middle-aged or getting to be an older father, and he said that he got into trouble when he was away, got into some literature and stuff that was very bad for him, and he said he came home, he remembers being so afraid that dad was going to ask a question, but dad didn't ask any questions. Dad didn't ask any questions. And he said it got easier and easier to go over into that, to go over and get involved in that when he would go away, get involved in it again. And he got to the place where he was secure that dad wouldn't ask any questions. It just gives you an example that if you ask questions, does it solve every problem? No. There's other things, you know, there's a lot in life, there's a lot in parenting, there's a lot in guiding. But I just give you that as an example to be involved in the child's life, that you ask questions, and it can stop something before it becomes a bad habit. Ask about their phone usage. It's right to get that phone, have access to that phone, and say, and look through it and see where they were. I believe that is right. Make time to ask questions. Make time to observe. Observe. Observation of children. I don't know that I excel at this one. I some people say, well, they're in a group and they read countenances and they know what people are thinking. I'm not that kind of person. I see you there. Some of you are smiling. Some of you aren't. Some of you are sober. That's all I know. But when it comes to your home, there is something when you live with someone you know, day after day after day after day, you can tell if a child isn't feeling well or something's on their mind or they're not just being themselves. Observe. And that creates a time to ask questions. It creates a time to start communicating. It don't have to be deep questions at first, but, you know, are you feeling well? You know, just start down some of those. I don't think we should immediately jump, you know, did you do something wrong? You don't want to jump right into that boat, but observe. Observe the countenances of your children. My father was tremendous at that. He just excelled at knowing kind of exactly where we were, and I was always amazed at that. I'm thinking, how did you know? He could just read. He could really read people's countenances, especially his children's. Tell stories. Tell stories that teach lessons. That's one thing I remember from my father. He would. There's still stories that ring in my mind that taught a lesson. It could be of someone he knew that, you know, lost out and gave up Christianity, gave up the faith, and he would detail the steps, what happened in the person's life. He's a very observant man, and so he could put those kind of things together very well. Tell stories to your children of what you went through, what you've seen in your life, those that have chosen the wrong path, and what those steps were. Many ways to tell stories. Second point, be steady. A steady environment is a good aid to the guidance of children. Steadiness is responding to situations rather than reacting to them. We respond as fathers and mothers, as dads and moms. You know, our children do get into trouble different times, or something comes up, and we get involved, start asking questions, and we respond to that. We say, well, this is where we need to go. This is what we need to change. This is the consequence. This is, rather than some type of blow up and you know, some type of overreaction. No, we respond. That's called steadiness. Steadiness is putting long-term boundaries in place where possible. And I like to do that. I had some of those thoughts again of putting long-term boundaries in. I think I need to pick up on some of that. Where it's just that children know, here's the guide rails. That's, stay within those guide rails, you know, from here till, that's where we want to be. And it saves, one of the things that saves is, so a child comes and he asks a question one day, can I go do this? And you're feeling good. You just made $1,500 in 3 hours and you're happy. So he said, sure, yeah, go ahead. And the next day comes and, you know, your best cow just died and they ask you the same question. No, why would you ever ask that? You see what I'm saying? So long-term boundaries takes out some of that up and down of parental emotions, because we have them, right? We have our ups and downs. So long-term boundaries, where you can, put them in place, because it saves some of that. I call that steadiness. I think steadiness also is not being intimidated by our role of being a parent. And I know some people talk about being intimidated by their teenagers and so on. And I think I understand how that could happen, and I think I can understand some of those pressures. I understand some of those pressures, but don't be intimidated. This is your responsibility. This is where God placed you. And so as your children are growing up, don't be intimidated either by your little child. Maybe they might throw a tantrum. Don't be intimidated by that. Respond to it. Take charge of that situation. Take charge. You are, as a dad especially, and mother's right by the side, don't be intimidated. It's not a time to be intimidated, because parents that are intimidated, I'll just say I believe I have observed some very poor outcomes of families where parents are intimidated. Third, go ahead and lead. Guidance thrives best in a proper authority structure. Do not allow parental authority to be supercharged. And what I mean by that is, I think it's possible to be a parent that we somehow take it really personal, and any kind of failure or something, we feel like what it kind of comes from the thought of, what will people think? Well, don't act like that. What will people think? And we get supercharged because we think we're this hero that has to protect our image and so on. That's not a good thought pattern. That is not the way to do it. I don't believe. Supercharged also has the thought of driving too hard, pressuring too hard in an unwise manner. I like to use the illustration of cattle. And I know our children are not cattle, but simple boundaries can work so well. Simple involvement, simple communication can help guide our children. I have a small herd of brood cows, beef cattle, and I enjoy cattle. I don't always enjoy working with them because sometimes they don't do what you wanted them to do, but I've observed so many times when you're trying to say there was cattle in this building, this was the barn, and I wanted them to go through that door where you enter. Right off the bat, most times cattle will not see that opening. They just won't see it. It's just the way they are. It's just the nature of cattle. And sometimes, depending, you know, exactly where that opening is, makes it more difficult for them to see. They don't see the opening at the end. They can't. And so what I've learned over the years is just gentle pressure. This gentle pressure. You just start working them from this end, and you just walk slowly, slow movements, even reaching out your hand, just making yourself a little bigger than you are. Just keep pressuring them. A few steps at a time. And there comes a point where the cattle, they start testing you. They start testing you, and they want to come back. They want to control you, push you back, because they don't know where they're supposed to go, right? Children are a little that way. They don't always know exactly. So that gentle pressure, and you crowd them toward the opening where they need to go through. And as you just keep that pressure there, and there will come a time where they kind of stop and they start to mill. They start to go round and round and round and round, but you just keep that pressure there. And sooner or later, one will see the opening and they start walking toward it. And what you don't want to do whenever the first one is getting his nose close to the opening, say, "Ah, get on in there." No, just keep that steady pressure. And after a while, chum, 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 there they all go. They're right through the door. Now, I'm not saying that child training works exactly that way, but the thought of that gentle pressure, pressuring toward the opening where you want them to go, by asking questions, by just saying, "No, not this way, not this way." Just keep that gentle pressure, and that's what I say is the opposite of being supercharged. But do not be lethargic and passive. Do not be lethargic and passive. There is a responsibility. There is a role. There is a necessary activity that we need to be involved in, and we must be involved in that. Be unapologetic about parental role. Be fair. Be Christian. Put in place home structure. I'm a firm believer of that. Home structure. Putting those boundaries in. This is the way we do it in this home. We eat at this time, we eat at that time. Not all those things are super important in every home, but there needs to be some, in my opinion, there needs to be some type of home structure where children get accustomed to regulations and rules and ways of doing things. It just helps in all of life. Encourage and critique instead of relentless pushing and criticism. Administer appropriate punishment for misbehavior versus bad behavior. And that is simply, you know, strong discipline might be needed for and is needed for something like lying or swearing or something like that. But if there's some type of misbehavior that I'm trying to think of an example right now, but something that is it's small. You don't want a spanking for that little misbehavior and the spanking for disobedience or lying, because in my opinion that confuses a child, and now they will equate dropping a glass, a water glass, and breaking it If they get a spanking for that and get a spanking for lying, what's the difference between the two? See what I'm saying? The discipline we bring into a child's life helps them determine what is actually serious wrongdoing versus something that's just careless or something that is a lesser misdemeanor. Well, I'm sure many of these things were not new to you tonight, but it's reminders. Again, we are in a very, very important work. It's a necessary activity. There is this particular path and goal destination that is toward God, that children need guidance towards, and there is someone who is assigned responsibility to guide that child, and that is you and I as parents. May God bless us as we go from this place to be better parents, better grandparents, to keep that gentle pressure that one by one they go through that opening into the kingdom and to serve God there in his church and in the world to be a testimony and witness to the unsaved around us. May God bless you.